On the feature this week, an in-depth look at a lawsuit that could turn Canada's euthanasia paradigm upside down.
He had a situation where one of the support workers left the appliances on, and he says, I had a fire in my house. He says, you can't have that. I can't get up and put the fire out. He had food poisoning. He had been injured, and they were transferring him. And he said, I can't have these situations. I can't be in a situation where I'm being put back into the hospital with injuries because my home care workers aren't going to properly care for me.
In the news, the Trudeau government is still refusing to back down on that controversial attestation requirement for the Canada Summer Jobs Program, and a lawsuit could now be coming. We Need a Law prepares for a mini-conference as part of this year's March for Life in Ottawa, and some pushback on a pro-life movie screening in Fergus, Ontario.
And now, Lighthouse News. Lighthouse News is a presentation of ARPA, the Association for Reform Political Action. Here's your host, Al Sebring.
The Liberal majority in Parliament handily defeated a motion from the Conservatives last week, a motion that would have supported access to Canada's summer jobs funding regardless of the private convictions of the applicants and regardless of whether or not they chose to sign the application's attestation. That attestation has been controversial. It forces applicants to essentially agree with the notion that abortion is a charter right. All the Conservative members voted for the motion, along with Green Party leader Elizabeth May, one backbencher each from the Liberals and NDP, and two members of the Bloc Québécois caucus. But the defeat of the motion means applicants for summer jobs funding are still in limbo when it comes to the status of their applications. Barry Bussey is a lawyer with the Canadian Council of Christian Charities, and he says more than 170 organizations are still waiting to hear what will happen next.
What we did was we encouraged all of our people who contacted us that if they were denied, to send another letter into the Canada Summer Jobs and to ask for an accommodation of their religious beliefs and their charter rights. And we are now being told that the answer to that request for accommodation will be given in early to mid-April. However, we are not very hopeful that the government is actually going to give approval to these organizations. So then the various charities are going to have to determine, okay, well, what will be their next step? Will they just drop it, or will they look at possible legal remedies? So it's kind of a wait and see.
Bussey says it's still unclear whether a lawsuit will actually be filed, but he also says this attestation sets a very dangerous precedent in terms of what else the government might do with respect to this kind of values test.
One does not have to be a rocket scientist to connect the dots, as it were. When the government makes a values test and says, we're not going to give you government funding or registered charitable status or perhaps even other licenses, who knows, unless you agree with us on whatever the issue is. This is just simply a recipe for chaos and disaster as a democratic society. I mean, it just simply is a no-go, but it seems like that's where we're headed. And I mean, religious, non-religious need to be concerned about this kind of thinking that's going on in government.
Bussey says ultimately the precedent set with the Summer Jobs Program attestation could be used to strip churches and other groups of their charitable status, restricting their ability to hand out tax receipts for donations. The March for Life is coming up in just over a month in Ottawa. Usually ARPA's biennial God and Government Conference runs concurrent to that big event, but this year the G&G gathering is being held earlier. So, the folks at We Need a Law decided to do a mini-conference in conjunction with the March for Life. Director Mike Shuten.
Tens of thousands of people come to Ottawa to experience the March for Life, and that's a great thing. But we also know that many of them go back home having experiences to kind of a fun, exciting day in Ottawa, but not with a whole lot of things that they can do or feeling that they're more equipped to engage in pro-life activism or speak about preborn human rights to their neighbors or coworkers, etc. So we thought, let's try and see if we can do something small. It's not a big thing. That's why we're calling it a mini conference, something whereby people can get not just plugged into our organization, but be given some tools and a small bit of education and experience in pro-life activism so that when they go back to their communities, they're more equipped and feel more encouraged that they can actually take part in this struggle to advance pre-born human rights in Canada.
Putin says they've got several activities planned over 2 days.
We're starting with a movie screening on the Thursday evening with a intentional discussion about the movie afterwards to educate and help us grow in our knowledge of this area. And then Friday, we're going to have 3 presentations during the morning. And then after lunch, we're going to go out and hit the streets with clipboards and petitions, engaging people in conversations and asking them to sign a petition indicating support for one of our key initiatives, and that's the International Standards Abortion Law. And then the people will be on their way home late that afternoon or that evening.
More information and registration information is available at the We Need a Law website. And finally, the Wellington Guelph ARPA chapter did a video screening of the Hush documentary on abortion in a local movie theater in Fergus last month. And they ran into some opposition when they promoted that event on social media. Organizer Paul van Groteest.
We did it at the Grand Theater, which is sort of the community theater there, in hopes to get a broader community out. So we sent out a bunch of flyers. We sent them out through a bunch of neighborhoods, and somebody posted onto the community share site. Other people started kind of posting their comments saying, look, it was a pretty well laid out film. It pointed some good things about it, but they got hammered pretty hard. Like, it's my body, my choice. And it's right away, of course, the common arguments that you hear, that if you disagree with abortion, you have no right to say anything.
So in the end, what happened? Did the community show up, or did you have protests?
No.
Or
no, we didn't. We didn't really have anybody from the community show up. What I did find interesting, though, is that the administrator there for the Grand Theater and the guy that did the sound, they both came up to us afterwards and was like, wow, that was a very interesting movie. They were both quite impressed with it. So from that experience, I really wish other people had been able to see it without jumping onto this, you know, it's just a pro-life film and it's pseudoscience.
Overall, Van Grote says they still consider the event a success. Back with more after this.
Planning is underway for the National March for Life. As has become an annual tradition, ARPA Canada and Jubilee CanRC in Ottawa will be co-hosting a Reformed prayer service. This year, Pastor Matt Kingswood will lead us in meditating on Habakkuk 1 verse 2 on the theme, How Long, O Lord? It will be held at First Baptist Church on Laurier in Ottawa on May 10th at 10:30 a.m. Contact info at arpacanada.ca for more.
And we're back on the program. A man in London, Ontario, has launched a lawsuit that could potentially provide a counterbalance to the so-called Carter decision, in which the Supreme Court legalized euthanasia in Canada just over 2 years ago. The 42-year-old man is in hospital with a debilitating condition. He was originally being cared for at home, but the home care he was getting was clearly substandard. It included food poisoning and other problems. But he's been offered medical assistance in dying in the hospital. And now he's suing to get out of that hospital and essentially suing for the right to have proper care at home. Alex Schadenberg is with the Euthanasia Prevention Coalition. He's been following the case closely. I talked to him last week, shortly after word of this lawsuit got out, and I asked him to start our interview by giving some further background to the case.
Roger Foley has cerebral ataxia, which is a degenerative neurological condition, and he was a very active person involved in political issues, involved with, you know, quite a few things in his life that made him very, very active, and then he came down with this condition. I don't know a lot about it. What I can say is, though, his long-term prognosis is a continued degenerative situation. He's not in any way asking or wanting medical assistance in dying. What he wants is assistance in living. So what happened is that he was living in his apartment, and the government has refused to allow him to hire his own home care team. And so he had problems with totally inappropriate things happening to him, and it actually got him stuck back in the hospital. So because he's in this situation, he's unable to leave the hospital until he says, I can be assured that I have proper care in the home for me, because in his condition, he can't do very much for himself. But he's been turned down for that. He applied to have direct personal support services, which is a possibility in Ontario, and they turned him down for it. They said that it wasn't possible for him to have that. And so, as he says, I'm in a situation where I don't want to have food poisoning. I don't want to have the workers burn down my house. He had a situation where one of the support workers left the appliances on, and he says, I had a fire in my house. He says, you can't have that. I can't get up and put the fire out. You can't have these situations. As I say, he had food poisoning. He had been injured, and they were transferring him. And he said, I can't have these situations. I can't be in a situation where I'm being put back into the hospital with injuries because my home care workers aren't going to properly care for me.
So what he's looking for, and I think the term you were looking for, was assisted life with self-directed funding. That's the option that is apparently available in Ontario, but they're not making it available to him?
Right, they call it self-directed care, and the program's called Self-Directed Personal Support Services Ontario, and it does exist, but they turned him down for that.
So now he's suing, and this is, in a sense, if I'm reading this right, and I've had a look at the court brief, this is the exact corollary on the opposite end of the spectrum to the Carter case. The Carter case says, I want a right to kill myself. This guy says, I have a right to assisted living, to stay alive. How's this going to play out?
I find this a very interesting case because, in fact, he's making an argument that what if I do want to live and I'm not receiving the services that make it possible to enable me to live, and yet they're offering me assisted death. So here I have then the choice of assisted death or languishing in a hospital without the type of care that I would rather have. And so he wants to be home. He wants to be out of that bed. He wants to be in his home with proper care. I don't know how it's going to come out, but I think his argument is very strong. I can also say that there is some precedent. People with disabilities in Winnipeg originally fought to get personal control of theirs. They wanted self-directed care, and this is quite a few years ago. There was a court case that was brought in to challenge the government's unwillingness to allow people with disabilities to hire their own care workers and to have control of the monies, etc., and how it's dispersed and who they hire. And in fact, they won that case back then, and that's why these sort of services exist. So in my opinion, he's got precedent on his side. What's also interesting is to bring this back to what happened to Candace Lewis in Newfoundland. Just to remind you, in 2016, soon after euthanasia was legalized in Canada, she was in the hospital in Newfoundland. She was very, very, very sick. She's only 25 years old, but she was born with multiple disabilities. And the doctor was pressuring her and her family for euthanasia, to ask for euthanasia. So much so that the mother went to the CBC News, and we've actually got interviews of her through our social media and everything, because she's better now. But the fact is, isn't this the same sort of idea? You're pressured towards euthanasia, and you're not interested in euthanasia. What you want is the treatment and the care to allow you to get better.
Are you surprised at how quickly this happened? I mean, I've talked to some lawyers about this case who say, wow, you know, it's been only a couple of years since Carter, and here we are arguing the other side of the case. We haven't seen these kind of arguments, I don't think, for example, in the Dutch or the Belgian context, and yet here we are in Canada. Now we're arguing the opposite end of the spectrum.
I'm not surprised by this happening very quickly. I'm actually a little bit shocked by the speed as to the acceptance of euthanasia in my country. And part of the problem, I think, is related to the fact that we were, during the whole Carter debate and during the whole euthanasia debate in Canada, we were heavily inundated by pro-euthanasia stories in our media. You know, if you look back just a couple years ago, how many stories did we have to be seeing by CTV News, Global News, CBC, inundating us with one story after another? So what they did is they broke down the resistance to the concept of euthanasia. And therefore, when it became legal, its acceptance level goes very, very fast. But also, you know, the fact that we're debating in Parliament right now, euthanasia being extended to children, euthanasia being extended to people who have psychiatric conditions alone, and euthanasia being extended to people who asked for it previously but who are now incompetent and cannot ask for it. You know, the Dutch have been debating for 20 years, and yet we're into this a year and a half or so, and we're jumping right in. It concerns me greatly. In this case, it doesn't surprise me with the Foley case, because if you go, for instance, to the Netherlands, as much as I might be shocked by their euthanasia laws, etc., I also recognize that they have excellent social services for people, far better than what we have. And so I don't think that if a person like Roger Foley were living in the Netherlands, I'm not saying he wouldn't be offered euthanasia like he's been offered, but I think that at the same time he'd be receiving the self-directed care that he's looking for.
Alex, we're out of time. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Al.
This has been Lighthouse News, delivering news and commentaries on today's current events to equip Christians for their task in the public square. Questions or feedback? You can leave us an audio comment by going to our homepage, www.lighthousenews.ca, and clicking on the answering machine button at the top of the page. Or you can send us an email, lighthousenews@arpacanada.ca. Be sure to join us again in 2 weeks for another edition of Lighthouse News.